G'day and welcome to the Logan Park High School Year 13 Biology Podcast. My name's Dick Perry. So what you're hearing is audio of classroom sessions. Most of the time, you'll be hearing everything that goes on because I talk a lot, you won't be able to see me waving my arms around, and you won't necessarily see slides or hear questions from people who are actually present in the class. But you'll get the general idea, so I hope it helps. Today's podcast sounds like it's a little bit out of order because we start off with a list of words that were produced by the New Zealand Ministry of Education about words that you should know before you start looking at DNA at Year 13. So there's a large list of words, and if you listen, you'll actually hear where they fit in. But you probably need to listen for a little bit and just get the hang of how this works.
Yesterday, we ran through some of these words from Year 12. So we got adenine, guanine, cytosine, thymine, amino acid, autosome, centromere, chromatin, chromatome, chromosome, deoxyribose. And about that point, chromatin is the stuff that chromosomes are made of, which is the mixture of DNA and protein sheath and the proteins they're wound around and stuff like that. Deoxyribose. Okay. So, anyone who's chemically literate, who knows what sugars are? Because deoxyribose is one. Okay, so the definition of sugars. Sugars aren't sweet. Sweet's not... Yeah, they're hot there. They go black when you burn them. But we need to just have a... We don't need to have a look. I'm intending to have a look. Now, organic chemists like number... carbon's always got four bonds. Look, I just drew deoxyribose on the board from memory. They're carbohydrates. So the overall formula should be something like, if glucose was C6H12O6, if we do the thing that mathematicians do and divide everything through by 6, we get CH2O. Carbohydrate. If you heat it and the water goes away, we're left with black stuff. That's the sort of sugary thing. Deoxyribose is a 5-carbon sugar, and the reason I'm doing it is just to give you some context for what happens next. They number it so that whatever's weird about the sugar gets the smallest, what's weird about the compound gets the smallest number. So this thing gets numbered from here, numbered from the right, 5 carbons, and this is the one that's different. Every other carbon's got an oxygen attached to it except for that one, which is 2-deoxy. Oxygen's off number 2. 2-deoxyribose. Now the reason that we'd look at that in any way, shape or form is that when we're talking about deoxyribose and stuff, this carbon's not, carbon 2 is not available for bonding, but also it says Y, when it's abbreviated as a pentagon. So, ribose and deoxyribose are both abbreviated as pentagons because if we take out all the extra atoms from there and we just keep these, technically it's a pentagon with an arm, but yeah, here.
So is there like a step that you say that this is sugar? So that's
a 5-carbon sugar. Yeah. So effectively, sugars have an empirical formula of CH2O.
Okay, so it's sort of like that.
Yeah. It's actually got the hydrogen and a hydroxide on each. Connor, I'm finding it a wee bit distracting. Are you being relevant or are you being irrelevant? Okay. So, CH2O, the general formula, is a hydrogen and an OH on each carbon. So this one's special because it's deoxy. So ribose, same thing. So when we see pentagons in structural formulas of stuff, that's what they mean. Sorry? Okay, so, yeah, and whenever we drew glucose, we do hexagons, and if we're going to be technical, we can put oxygens there, but people never do. a ribose sugar. If it's in DNA, it's deoxyribose. If it's RNA, it's ribose. Yeah. They play spot the difference between ribose and ribose, deoxyribose. Ribose with oxygen, deoxyribose without oxygen. If you had an O there, it would be ribose. No two. Yep.
What's the difference in function? I mean, I know DNA and RNA, but what's the
real difference that I can think of here is shape. Oxygen's a reasonable size molecule. So enzymes that fit ribose don't fit deoxyribose. So if you're trying to break something down, like if you've got enzymes that break down RNA, they won't eat your chromosomes. They won't eat your chromosomes because they're made of DNA.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so just a slight difference because... Yeah, safety for stuff. If you've got your chromosomes in the nucleus, basically RNA is translated in the nucleus and sent to the cytoplasm where it does its thing. And it usually gets translated a few times and then it gets broken down. RNA in the nucleus, though, is generally bad. Anyone think of why? Viruses. It's viral defense. Yeah, it's viruses putting RNA in that gets itself incorporated into your nuclear DNA. Now that they've sequenced a whole lot more human genomes, they've actually found lots of viruses in our genome. Because the thing that scared me back whenever it was that I did biochemistry, 1,000 years ago, was they had a discussion about two kinds of viruses. Viruses bind to the outside of a cell and inject their genetic material in. Now, our defences for this is that if DNA gets found in the cytoplasm, we've probably got viruses that break it down, because DNA in the cytoplasm is bad. The long-term effect of being infected by a virus for a cell is cell death. So cells that can kill viruses survive better. So when they sequence these things, there's two kinds of viruses you find. What were called lytic viruses, which are the ones you learn about in year 12, year 11, because you never do anything effective about viruses again. Viruses inject their genetic material in, it gets incorporated into the chromosome, your cell makes a zillion copies of the virus, the cell then bursts. Lysis, bursting. But there's others called lysogenic viruses, which scared me, probably still do. They incorporate into your chromosome and just sit there. There's a bunch of different things that they do, because if you stick a bit of DNA in your chromosome, probably, hopefully, you know enough to know why that might be bad. Okay, what are your chromosomes for? Chromosomes contain the instructions, they get translated into RNA that make proteins, right? If you stick a dirty great piece of viral DNA in the midst of one that says, make hair colour, all of a sudden, makes the first part, then makes a whole lot of virus, and probably stops there and doesn't make the next bit. You go, great. Now, if it's somewhere really important, like a stop dividing message, and there's a bit of viral DNA in there, your cell goes, make one copy, make another copy, make another copy. Guess what cancer is? Cancer is cell division out of control. Usually the cells also forget who they are, forget what they are. So it's cells who've lost their differentiation and lost the stop making it when you've made a pretty little nose message. Yeah, tumours are just uncontrolled cell growth. They've got another couple of really fancy bits that we'll look at later on, but there's some indication, there's a bunch of viruses that cause cancer because of where they insert. It's like cancer's been described as cell division which got foot hard on the accelerator and someone's killed the brakes. So the cells are dividing like crazy and there's nothing to stop them and they've forgotten who they are. So your lungs just grow a big massive tissue that forgets that it's lung and therefore doesn't work as lung. And the aim for chemo is to nearly kill you and then bring you back again. Because in adults, now I thought this was really simple until my mother had cancer and had chemo, and I found it was more complicated and uglier than I thought. But, sorry, we shouldn't do too many personal stories at this point. Basically, as an adult, I'll treat you all as adults, as an adult, most of your cells have stopped dividing. Most, not all. Like, your nails grow, your fingernails grow. Things like salivary glands still produce stuff, and your intestine, the lining of your intestines and things grow. But the significant, I'm getting taller, those kind of things aren't growing anymore. So you can kill all, you can kill all dividing cells. You will survive that. Yeah, it's why hair falls out, your eyes go dry. I didn't realise your eyes went dry. Digestive troubles. My mum described it like always having sand in her eyes. But you think, that's bad. What's the alternative? The alternative is like being dead, and that's worse. Sorry? Yeah. Oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff with it, but if we're talking the really simple version of chemotherapy, kill all dividing cells, then, when they've all died, bring you back again. So the cancer's died because it's dividing faster than everything else. That's the aim. Radiotherapy is, kills all dividing cells, but it aims it at places. Yeah, see, yeah, they don't use chemo on kids unless they really have to, because you end up with your growth stunted forever. But yeah, but you've got the whole point. One of the reasons that, I don't know if you probably, those of you who are tallish, even those of you who are not, how many of you are taller than your parents? How many of you are taller than your grandparents? Yeah. Generally, that's true. Like, that's 2/3 of the class. I noticed it because I used to have to spend time with people older than me. Ellie, how old are you? Yeah, probably not much. 18 and a woman. You're going to need to have to make the most of what you got. Guys tend to grow a little bit longer, but yeah. Growth starts and finishes. I can't say for sure. I was the short, quiet little kid that nobody ever noticed until I was about halfway through the sixth form. So, yeah. And I'm still not tall, but I noticed because of my father's job and the like, spent time with a whole lot of people older than me, and it was a little bit disturbing for me to look around and find that I was amongst the tallest 3 or 4 people, like in a church congregation. And that might mean that everyone who goes to Presbyterian churches was short. It probably actually just meant that they were older than me. Because mostly people grow taller each, people have grown taller each generation for about the last 150 years, except for the last generation in America. Yeah, they are. Now the Dutch are the tallest people in the world. But yeah, Americans are still bigger. But yeah, truly, diet, the quality diet has become less of an issue, has become more of an issue. But yeah, the Americans were the tallest for years and years. Yeah. Well, what we're talking about here is the whole population again. You're talking about the whole population. So if there are groups of people for whom malnutrition becomes an issue, the population on average doesn't grow as much. Effectively, you've got a potential growth, and every time you have a serious illness, you stop. And every time you have a dietary restriction, you stop. And there's some other freaky things, like every time your grandfather got starved 100 years ago, that might get passed on to you as well, and you might also like stop growing. That's epigenetics, and we'll wander into epigenetics later in the course. Cheese. No. In general, what we're saying here is that they've got an unrestricted good diet. And one of the things that did American is that if you think about the tall American settlers, this was, you know, Scandinavians, Dutch, German, West African. On average, America must just about have a taller population than everywhere else. Because it's polyglot. Um, Sorry, I'll just try and find what I was trying to say at this point again. So viruses inserting into your cells can sit there. When they sequenced James Watson, the guy who developed DNA structure, they sequenced his genome a couple of years ago. There was a new DNA sequencing company. You find a high-profile person to sequence. They found at least 7 genes, which, if he'd had 2 copies of them, would have been fatal. And now what they're doing in human genomes is looking for viral genomes, finding what other viruses we've got. Now, it's actually not as bad as it sounds, because we've got 3 billion DNA bases and about 15 to 20,000 genes, and the estimate is sort of in the range of 10% of our DNA's coding. Now, that may not actually be true, but 10% of our DNA turns into actual genes that we can find that make actual proteins. DNA makes RNA, which makes protein. There's some indication that some of the bits that we thought made nothing actually make sequences of RNA that go off and do stuff. But, yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah, I didn't... My hair was really, really dark till I started teaching. I was using it as an example. Viruses aren't necessarily the thing that make hair go grey. The cells stop dividing because they start losing integrity of their DNA. And one of the things that cells have also got is a suicide switch. Things are going out of control. I'll kill myself. Okay. Apoptosis is actually a preventing it. But yeah, my hair's going grey because the hair follicles that make melanin or put melanin into my hair fibres aren't working anymore. It could be viral, it could be stress, it could just be that those bits have reached their use-by date.
Well, I know this chap and she's blonde, and naturally blonde, and she's got three
patches in front. Yeah, and that happens too. Like, localised damage. And it's really hard, because you come from one cell, anything that messes up, you know, this is why you learned mitosis. Okay, you start with one cell, it makes an exact copy of the DNA, you get 2 cells. They make exact copies, you get 4. If damage happens to just one of them, then that one will keep multiplying. It's what explains stuff like... there was a kid I knew when I was growing up, who had one eye that was half green and half brown. There's a line down the middle of it. It was even cooler in the days before fancy contact lenses. But yeah, so he had like 1.5 green eyes and half a brown eye. Yeah, some people just work out there's something slightly wrong looking at him and he can't quite work out what it was. Until you look up close and go, wow. But he probably got sick of people looking at his eyes and going, wow. I don't know. I didn't ask him. Thanks, Rory. We'll take everything back to reproduction eventually. Okay, so. Viruses... So, defence against viruses is probably a really, really useful thing. Okay, we're still in the D's on words that we're supposed to have known from last year. DNA, okay, we can do that one. Eukaryote, we did eukaryote yesterday as well. And I was so impressed with my ability to rapidly draw a picture of a eukaryote that I drew it again when I had a Year 12 class. Gametes. Everyone's cool about this? If we come across a word that you don't know, this is time to call out. Genetic code. The genetic code is universal. Okay. Genome and genetic code. Genome is the sum of all of the DNA in one of your cells. Your genome, like if we took any one of your cells and sequenced it, they would always be the same. Each one of your cells has got all of the instructions to make you in it. Okay, we took a sample from the inside of your cheek and a blood sample, a little cell from the skin on the sole of your foot. Each of them would have exactly the same sequence in them. Yeah, all of the cells that make you up are all genetically the same. You could technically take one cell and grow a copy of you. So that's Rory's genome. Make this bigger. Yes. Our cells are different, but they're not very different. Inbreeding in human populations has been quite extreme, and so we're actually surprisingly similar. But yeah, so the human genome is all the genes that make up a human. Your own personal one, all the genes that make you up. Genetic code is actually the ATCG thing, and what that's the what amino acid gets coded for. It's all your genes. Yeah, all your genes. Yeah, your genome's the same in every cell, but different genes are turned on in different ones. Yeah.
And then a genetic code is more specific. That's how that's the code of each piece of DNA.
Yeah, it's reading the ATCG. That's the genetic code. Okay, histone. Histone's the protein that the DNA is wrapped around in a chromosome. So you know the chromosomes are all coiled up. The skeleton that they did that on is called called histones.
That they
wrap the DNA around? God.
Okay.
The gods. Whatever we want to say. DNA is wrapped around histone proteins, makes the chromatin, makes what we see as the chromosomes. Could I draw it? Probably not. DNA. DNA is a squiggly thing. But basically what we've got is it then supercoils around... So the structure of the chromosome is made of histones. Yeah. Histone is a frame... Centromere, yeah, yeah.
So, say this is in my hand, looking at
DNA. Yep.
And this is it wrapped around like that, or is it like a string that wraps around?
Yeah, it's wrapped around, it's the fist thing, your head. It's wrapping around, okay, so histones are sort of like a frame that you wrap all the string around. It's a DNA string. Homologous. Butanoic acid. The smell is butanoic acid, or you could say you're just living downstream from a quality Parmesan cheese factory. Karyotype. Homologous is the same chromosome. You've got two copies of chromosome 1, two copies of chromosome 2, so both your copies of chromosome 1 are homologous chromosomes. Or homologous, but homologous sounds a little bit, it flows better. Okay, so homo is the same, logos word, I think, but yeah. So, yeah, and we don't use heterologous as a chromosome word, because the only time we need to refer to it is if we're referring to the two copies of chromosome 4 that you've got, the homologous chromosomes. Because you've got two copies of each one, except if you're a boy and we're talking about your sex chromosomes. A karyotype's all your chromosomes. I'll actually show a picture of a karyotype's better, but it's those pictures of chromosomes where they're all laid out by size. So, you know, chromosome 1 is bigger than chromosome 2, which is bigger than chromosome 3, and it changes by size from top to bottom, and also whereabouts the centromere is. So before anyone knew what chromosomes were, they found ways of grouping them together that made sense, and that's why they're named what they're named. Because one was the biggest. Not because it does anything else, but it was the biggest. And they used to do it by squashing a cell undergoing mitosis and cutting them out of the photograph and lining them up. These days, you know, digital technology makes this work a lot better, but that's how it happens. K in meiosis. Okay, we need to go back. We'll go back through it. Doesn't come to mind straight away. So, the karyotype is used to determine... Effectively, the reason the karyotype's done is to determine first whether you are homogametic or heterogametic. boys or girls, and sit girls, because girls have got homologous X chromosomes. Boys have got different gametes, ones with X and ones with Y. Birds, on the other hand, have it the other way around. Male birds are homogametic and females are heterogametic. They call them Z's and W's in birds, but yeah, males are double Z and females are ZW. So you've got to know it if you're a budgie breeder or something like that. Yeah, but birds are different. Yeah. Birds are the common ones of those, yeah. The increasing weight of scientific opinion is that birds are actually what happened to the dinosaurs, and that birds actually are dinosaurs. So not birds have evolved from dinosaurs, but the evolution of dinosaurs has just changed shape and size. And so what's happening, and the most recent one I was listening to was a guy from Yale who was talking about when they found something like, there's a famous fossil which has got a nest, Oviraptor maybe, of eggs. There's a nest of eggs. And the discussion was, they were discussing it basically looking at dinosaurs as reptiles. And this might seem like really trivial, but the difference between reptiles and birds, that's a good question. Who knows the difference between reptiles and birds in terms of nesting behaviour? Turtles dig burrows, and how many eggs do they put in a turtle burrow? Heap, laid at once. How many eggs do birds lay at once? One. So birds lay eggs one at a time, then sit on them, and they all develop together. Reptiles lay all their eggs at once and sod off, and they all develop together. Kieran. Yeah, I think they lay them day at a time. Well, hens do. If you're not incubating an egg, yeah, I think they sit there until they're continuously warmed, because obviously the mother sits there long enough to lay the next egg. So I'm, yeah, but they don't hatch necessarily day apart.
No.
They tend to, birds tend to, because they tend to talk in their shells and stuff, they cheep and they communicate. Kaylee. True. There's some evidence, though, that stuff like, because the oviraptor nest is a famous fossil, and someone looked at it thinking, hang on, what if birds did this? And there's some features that I can't remember specifically which suggested that the eggs had been laid sequentially one at a time and that they were then actually incubated. Now, what does that say about dinosaurs if they have to incubate their eggs? They're warm-blooded. So there's a bunch of those types of things where it's in thinking through that lens actually gives us some more information about dinosaurs. Yes. Ah, there's a lot of evidence that there was a massive media strike. Question is, so the serious version of the question is, what would survive a massive meteor strike?
Cockroaches.
And the answer is cockroaches and small things. So the massive dinosaurs did all die out. Absolutely. But what the suggestion here is that, I mean, how big's the biggest bird?
Maybe the bird,
I mean, yeah, and development of feathers. Feather pattern. They found fossilised feather patterns. And the answer to that one is really, really creepy. All this forensic biology stuff. So they found a feather pattern that was obviously like fossilised like hundreds of millions of years old, I think. And we're saying it's fossilised like black, white bands. And go, how on earth did that happen? And what happens is that the melanocytes in the black bands, melanin, the black colouring, but what the pattern is actually the bacteria that ate the feather. So the creepy part is it looks like feather, But what it is that the bacteria that ate it are the things that actually got fossilized. So the bacteria that ate it, if you look at it really closely, you can actually see the pattern of the little rod-shaped bacteria that fit along the feather. That's the creepy part. It's sort of gone all slimy and horrible. Yeah, so we're finding as many broad things as we have. Yes, females determine what sex the offspring is. Because what we're saying is homogametic, all your gametes are one kind. So, you are homogametic. All your gametes contain an X chromosome. Rory is heterogametic. Seriously, don't go there. The seriously don't go there about you having a little bit of male in is that they're finding that's a little bit more common than people like to think. Is that the explanation for hermaphrodites, and I'm not suggesting that you are one, the explanation for hermaphrodites is that hermaphrodites appear all to be chimeras. So, and a chimera is where you have two genotypes, basically. You and your twin sister both developed, and the most bizarre version of it was a woman. I mean, some people who are chimeras don't find out, but they just have like autoimmune problems and stuff all their lives. Because one woman, I think, found out that her blood was a different genotype to the rest of her body. So the verb spent her whole life with parts of her blood trying to eat the rest of the body. But the other one, the one that was most spectacular, was the woman whose ovaries didn't belong to her. So her ovaries were her twin sisters. Her twin sister, all that existed of her twin sister was her ovaries. Because they did a DNA test of her kids and found out that she couldn't be the mother of any of them. Now, she distinctly remembered being pregnant and giving birth to them. And then, like, the chain of evidence suggested that, you know, the baby that she gave birth to was the one that slept in the room beside her. And it happening to three babies being swapped in the hospital was probably a little bit extreme. And that her husband was the father of all of them. Look is really, really, is a really, really broad thing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know your family. How much do you look like your parents? Okay. How many of you look spitting image of one of your parents? How many of you don't look at all like any of your parents? Okay. Yeah. I went through life looking exactly like one of my parents. It's not something I recommend, especially if it's the other sex parent. I grow all this facial hair to avoid the, oh my, you look like your mother. No, it's not true, but it was the way people sort of, you know, you get introduced and you go, oh, you look like just like your mother. Your mother couldn't lose you, could she? And various, you know, other helpful comments that obviously I can still remember after all that time. Mixing of genes means that it's not always really obvious whether or not someone looks, you know, you look like your parents or not. And you can find all sorts of odd echoes in there as well. Or odd little things like sense of humour or stuff, yeah. Looking like grandparents, my niece looks a lot like my grandmother.
Does she tell jokes like your grandmother?
In terms of what you find funny, no, I notice that in my kids. Now, how much of that's environmental and how much of that's genetic, who knows? If half your genes are active in your brain, then a bunch of ways of thought are probably genetic. At the risk of telling far too many family stories, I didn't know this until after I'd done university stuff. And after my first or second year at university, I was sort of sitting at home talking to my dad. And, you know, because I'd always looked at my dad as being, you know, the university education, the masters in chemistry and stuff. And we had this conversation and we went through my results. I talked about my varsity results. He said, it's almost exactly the same as mine. Like, almost exactly the same. There was one paper different and it includes things like our maths results, for example. Maths is good for me. Maths was really good for humility for me because it took me three times to pass calculus at varsity. So, with an overall grade of C-.
Mm.
And you might have learned it because you might have seen it. And the other one is hair twiddling. Hair twiddling? Twisting your hair into little... which I can't do anymore, but... spent my whole life doing. Yeah, so there's a whole lot of stuff in genetics. Now, so we're assuming you know meiosis and mitosis, nucleic acids, polypeptide chain. We all made a polypeptide chain if we were here, and if we didn't, you're all going to have to watch the video, Karen. Ribose, RNA. No, I could print it out. Okay, somatic body. We're dividing cells into gametes and somatic cells. Your body cells, your reproductive cells. A little aside about birds and bees. Birds and bees is probably the worst possible euphemism for sex education we can get. If we're trying to educate young humans about sex, then birds, where males are homogametic and females are heterogametic, is sort of odd. And bees, where they've got three sexes. Yeah, I know. Birds and bees is great for alliteration, and we just take some technical science and spoil it. I understand the problem with that. Fertile female and sterile female are different. They've got different number of sex chromosomes. No, different expression of sex chromosomes, and then males are not heterogametic because male bees have got just one sex chromosome. I always get confused about sex with bees. Sex in bees. Because sex, I mean, and, okay, somatic is a body cell. Okay, your body cells are different from your gametes because they've got, your body cells have all got pairs of chromosomes, your gametes have got single copies. Sperm. Yeah, autosomal chromosome, no, yeah, no, we need to do, the autosomes are the chromosomes that aren't your sex chromosomes, but... somatic's the bigger word. In your body, you have cells containing 23 pairs of chromosomes. 22 pairs of autosomes, one pair of sex chromosomes. Except in your gametes. Okay? No. Okay. Gametes are not sex chromosomes. What we need to do here is your gametes are what are made by your gonads. So, in your gonads, we're being general about the picture of gonads. They come from your lower abdominal region because they both have the same embryonic tissue. Scary but true. They're influenced by hormones in terms of the way they develop. So when you're really tiny, until you start producing estrogen or testosterone, the gametic tissue is the same. And so if we take it from scary, spooky video things, if you take it from female embryos, you can actually make it grow into testicular, long, tubey things. And you can take, or you can influence it by estrogen and do the same kinds of things. So in gonads is the only place that meiosis happens. Meiosis is called the reduction division, and we get gametes. Gametes are produced by meiosis, and they've got a half set of chromosomes in them. Yeah, you're talking. We're talking generally here, right? They're not gametes until they've gone down the sperm track. No, don't say autosomes. Okay, so in your gametes you have 22 Okay, we're playing spot the difference. In your body cells you've got 23 pairs of chromosomes. In your gametes you've got 23 chromosomes. So we're playing spot the difference. 23 chromosomes, so each pair gets split. Now, if we're talking about that, Therefore, if we're going to play spot the difference, and it's only relevant in males at this point, if this was males, these two would be noticeably different if you laid out all the chromosomes. Because, for example, this could be the left sperm is 22 plus X, and the right-hand sperm, 22 plus Y. That's sex determination in humans. So meiosis produces gametes, and so the only difference between them, the similarity here is the autosomes, 22, the difference is the sex chromosomes. Okay, so gametes are only sperm and eggs. So I used the word somatic in a sentence rather than Rory's somatic cells. Okay. Rory's Soma is wearing a red t-shirt, red sweatshirt. Body. This is your body apart from your testicles. I know everything's about your testicles, but it's everything except your testicles.
And I'm just going to assume we don't really need to know this word.
Okay, they're using the word somatic cells to talk about cells that have got pairs of chromosomes in them.
Okay.
Your sperm don't have pairs of chromosomes in them.
Okay?
Your sperm have got single chromosomes. Okay? So, they are pre-gonadic tissue. It's sort of complicated because in males, I keep pointing at him when I'm talking about sperm, which is probably unfair. In males, males produce sperm for effectively their whole lifetime. Sperm production is affected by things like increased testicular temperature and exposure to THC and stuff like that. But, and dope drops your sperm count.
Oh.
As does driving taxis. Because your testicles, optimum temperature for sperm production is about 35 degrees centigrade. Because it's a fat-soluble thing, and it actually, most of the tissue in your testicles is fatty, and it absorbs it. It sits there in the fat under your skin, and there, and it's that six-month latency time. Yes. My favourite eccentric geneticist is a man called Steve Jones, who's was at University College in London, and he said, well, one of the issues is that, therefore, the people with the healthiest sperm count should be men from the Highlands of Scotland, because the kilt does allow you to keep your testicles at an optimum temperature, absolutely. And so, yeah, tight underwear is supposed to reduce sperm count, which is why they're talking about competitive cycling being a potential issue. You spend a lot of time with your testicles tucked up against your body, your sperm count can be decreased. If you spend a lot of time exposed to synthetic estrogens in the environment, means living in mainland Europe, for example. No, but they haven't found very many male fish off the mouth of rivers like the Rhine for a long time. How does estrogen get into the big rivers of Germany? What a good question. Women's urine.
Yeah.
Women on the pill taking synthetic estrogen and peeing. And sewage treatment plant goes into the river and goes down the river and into the ocean. And it's a big river. There's some suggestions that estrogens in the environment are starting to become an issue, but there's a whole bunch of things. One of the additives to stuff like polycarbonate plastics appears to be a synthetic estrogen, and that's an issue. Increased in estrogens in the environment from stuff like, most water has been through the sky as well, which is what you're hoping for. They talk about recycling wastewater from sewage, but they tend to only talk about using it for irrigation. The other thing is that there's an increased amount of what they call phytoestrogens present because of the increased use of soy in Western diets. and there are phytoestrogens present in soy as well. So a bunch of those things has two main effects, two potential effects. One is that there's some concern that the sperm count of men worldwide in general is dropping. Second, there's some concern that estrogens present in the environment is causing early puberty in girls, and in some parts of the United States that can be as young as 8. I think you probably wish you hadn't said that. And you're hoping that the microphone doesn't pick you up. But the issue about early puberty is stuff like long-term growth, for example. Effectively, one of the things is that the pubescent growth spurt is thought to be about the same height for a particular individual, regardless of when it starts. In other words, the later it comes, the taller you were first, therefore you end up taller in the end. So if you hit puberty really early, you then get a pubescent growth spurt from a lower base. Now, tallness isn't a really big issue unless you're really into basketball. But there's a bunch of other things, such as early puberty has things. When I was talking yesterday about breasts and breast cancer, there's some evidence that, you know, lactation at around 18 years of age is the best preventer of breast cancer that there is. But if 18 is like 10 years since you hit puberty, it might be like there may be some other problems about, because some of these things have use-by dates, and we've lived longer than the use-by dates of it. Breasts are one, prostates are the other, and we mentioned those yesterday. Most men over 80 who die have prostate abnormality, which might be called prostate cancer. It's not usually what kills them, but it's reached its use-by date, and it's now not, you know, the cells aren't dividing properly, it's not able to do its job, even though men that age are still fertile, which we don't necessarily talk about again. Women that age are not fertile. So women that age aren't fertile. Women, while they've stretched the age of potential fertility for women out somewhat, women are born, most, I think, your eggs are produced at about 5 months gestation, you know, when you're about this big. So ovary development and stuff, you're born with the number of eggs that you've got, and you release one every 28 days or thereabouts, so 13 a year. I think there's also another egg turns up as part of the development, as part of the ovarian development. But when you run out of eggs, you stop, that cycle stops happening. That's what menopause is, and then hormone levels in your body and stuff start dealing with. One of the treatments of menopause is that you give women estrogen. One of the side effects of giving women estrogen is breast cancer. So there's one of those little balancing things that turns up. It's because your body's basically, the hormone levels have completely gone whoa. And Rory has a question. Guess how many it is? A tetrad. How many things in a tetrad? Four. It's that thing in meiosis where there's four chromatids. You know, in meiosis you get the X-shaped things, and in meiosis two X-shaped things line up down the middle. That's a tetrad. Yeah, then they get pulled apart because there's not four anymore. Okay, zygote. Zygote's the first fertilized cell. You all were one. Because I think the person who developed the word zygote was a Scrabble fiend.
Developed the word zygote, get it? Developed.
Yeah, thanks, Rory. Okay. So that's taken us 2 days to do the words from year 12. We've obviously therefore got concepts, and we shall speed this up, but yeah, I'll print that.